She talked constantly about her love of the planet and how she could almost feel its pain over how society had begun to destroy her. It was obvious to me that she was one of the light beings on the Earth, here to help bring the people back to a peaceful existence on the planet. When I meet young people like Lian, it gives me hope for the future of humanity. Her strength and knowledge of the way we should be living gives everyone around her strength. Living in harmony with the Earth, remembering and learning the old ways, giving thanks for everything this wondrous place supplies for us. Today we call it sustainable living. With all that I had been told by the aliens, I could see that this family was following their guidance, even if they did not know they were settling in the one place I was told were the safe lands. The Four Corners area. As my time with the Andersons came to an end, I couldn't help but smile inside. I was so happy that I made the decision to meet with them in Colorado. I felt very close with Kathleen. She was like a long-lost sister to me, as well as a mother at the same time. I never told her this, but I felt safe being around her. Everyone knew that I was going to go and see the Hopi medicine man again. The question was when. After two wondrous days in Colorado, I woke in the morning and knew it was time to go. Kathleen made breakfast for everyone and we talked about my next stop, Hopi Land. I was nervous about going to see Robert again. Andy's trip was like an unscheduled visit as there was no need for me to go there, at least not from the aliens' perspective. The visit was solely to pacify my human emotions. Although I didn't need any more confirmation, I wanted it. The drive to Hopi was beautiful. I passed the Red Rock Mesas and, as always, took a deep breath as they came into view. I loved the feeling of being in that area. It felt like I was coming home. It's a comfort that is not easily described. From Colorado to Hopi I had to pass Chinle, but this time I would not be stopping to see Stevenson. That would have to wait until I was on my way back through. The closer I got to my destination, the more my mind turned to what I would say to Robert once I arrived. I knew that the book was already being written about my experiences and that I would have to release it to the public within the next year. My intention was to tell Robert my goal and see what kind of a reaction he had. The red sun began to say goodnight to the Earth. As I drove, I saw Robert in a vision. He was going to be leaving his home soon. I didn't want to miss him, so I drove a little faster, knowing that he would be leaving in 30 minutes. My eyes kept a close watch on the time, but, as the minutes passed, I knew that I wouldn't catch him. I hadn't told him I was coming, believing that if my spirit wanted me to talk to him, he would be there when I arrived. As the car pulled onto the mesa, I knew I had missed him by about 20 minutes. My hope was that he would at least be coming back and hadn't gone on a journey of some kind. I pulled the car in front of Robert's home. As with the last time, all eyes were on me as I got out of the car. Darkness had set in and as I approached Robert's door I could see that it was also dark inside. I went to the door anyway, just in case. It was open so I peeked my head slightly inside to call out a hello. There was no reply. The year prior I was taken to a relative's home across the street for breakfast. I knew they would probably know where Robert was. The home was filled with the bustle of children. Before I could knock on the open door, several of the people inside were already greeting me at the doorway. "Hello," I said. They looked at me and said, "Hello. Do you know if Robert is around or is he out of town? I think I missed him by about 20 minutes." The woman had a confused look on her face. "Did you have an appointment with him?" she asked. "No, I just missed him, didn't I?" They looked at me strangely. "He went to the Kiva." "Okay, I can come back. Do you know how long he will be there?" Before I knew it, they were sending one of the kids to the Kiva to tell Robert I was there. I don't think they even asked my name. All they knew was a strange woman was there to see him. I told them I had been in their home for breakfast with Robert last year. Some people spoke in Hopi and then I heard Robert's voice behind me. "Hello. Hello. Come on." Robert waved his hand for me to follow him back to his home. As we walked in the door he giggled and said, "What are you doing here?" I didn't expect you until next year. As he said this, I chuckled inside. I knew this was an unscheduled stop. I sat down with Robert, who was smiling from ear to ear. What are you doing here? What's going on? He asked me again. I told him, I am here because I started to write about my experiences. I wanted to tell you and the Hopi people. I am not here to ask your permission. I don't need to ask your permission because what I am writing about is my life. I am doing what the aliens asked me to do and I follow them. Okay, but what can I do for you? Robert asked rather seriously. I don't really know. I guess I want to know if the Hopi are going to accept what I write about. I'm here to tell them I am doing this. It was then he gave me what I came for. Do you want me to gather the elders? I could do it right now if you want. I don't know what you want. Maybe you want to talk to them one-on-one to see what each one of them knows, or maybe you want to speak to them as a group. You let me know, Robert said while leaning towards me. It was clear to me that Robert felt as I did. Maybe, just maybe, I was someone important to the Hopi people. The secondary reason I came to Hopi was so I could feel the land again. When I went to my hometown to look for the gift given to me by the aliens, I wanted to be able to think of the land here as I thought perhaps it could help guide me to the gift. I wasn't sure if any of this really made sense at the time, but it felt right, and that was all that mattered. I was following my spirit. Knowing how to follow your spirit is a key to this life. I don't need to see them now. It's still too early, I told Robert. I wasn't sure why I said these words. Sometimes I will say things when I am in a certain frame of mind that I feel don't really come from me. Instead, the words come from my spirit. I really wanted to talk to the elders, but somehow I knew if I did, the aliens might not be happy with me. How long are you going to be here? Are you going to take off again? Robert asked. The year before, he really wanted me to stay for the celebration after the ceremonies, but I knew I couldn't. I told him I would have loved to stay, but the time wasn't right to meet everyone. And is time, I said, I would be staying for as long as it took. I had lots of time and I was in no rush. He offered me his home. Gratefully, I accepted his hospitality. I felt I had been given a gift with Robert's presence, as he was busy doing ceremonies in the Kiva with other Hopi later that night. He told me I could stay in his home as he went back to the Kiva. When he returned, we talked for a few hours about what had transpired for both of us since we had last seen each other. I shared with him that when I returned to my hometown, I would begin to look for the object the aliens gave me as a child. Over the next couple of days, Robert and I talked mostly about the aliens, but not entirely. I felt like I was home again. Each morning we would go to his relative's home for breakfast. I was sure everyone was wondering what I was doing there, especially because he was letting me stay in his home. The second night on the mesa, Robert asked me if I would like to go for dinner at the restaurant a short distance down the highway. As always, I didn't have a lot of money and was trying to eat only camp food to keep my costs down, so I was grateful for this outing. As we were about to get into my car on our way to the restaurant, the Hopi woman from next door began hollering at Robert and Hopi. I could tell they were talking about me because they kept looking in my direction and then back to each other. Robert laughed as he got in the car. As we pulled away, I asked him what she said. She told me to get rid of you. She said you are no good. You can't even cook me supper. You have to take me for supper. She said it was time for you to leave the mesa, he said with a smile on his face. What did you say to her? I asked, returning the smile. I told her that you aren't taking me to supper. I am taking you, he replied. Oh, they are all talking, everybody. Before I even got down into the Kiva last night, the questions started, he said, chuckling again. What do you tell them I am doing here? I asked. I told them you are here just to talk. Boy, does that get them, Robert replied. They keep asking me as well what my business is with you. What do you tell them? He asked. Well, I tell them the same thing, that I am here just to talk with you. We both laughed. We were keeping everything a secret and it must be driving them all crazy, we concluded. In time, I thought, I will be able to speak freely. I wanted it to be that day, but I knew it wasn't the right time. For me, for the Hopi, for the aliens, who knows, but I had to wait. After two nights on the mesa, I knew it was time to get back on the road. I wanted very much to stay, but there was no real point to it. I got what I came for and it was time to move on. Robert and I spent our last few minutes together talking about my eventual return. I told him the next time I came back I would be staying. More importantly, I would be sharing my information about the aliens with anyone who wanted to hear it. He seemed pleased with that and we sat in silence for the last few moments before saying goodbye. Once again I found myself looking at Robert through my rear view mirror as I drove off the mesa. Andy's trip to Hopi had been calmer than the last visit. I felt my mind and body starting to come together with my soul and I could feel the harmony beginning. No more hiding, no more waiting. The time was close at hand now. I quickly turned my thoughts to the next leg of my journey. I still had several days before I was to return home and I was grateful for the opportunity to relax. I felt as though the rest of my time in the Four Corners area could be spent taking it easy. I decided to make one last stop in Canyon de Chelly and see Stevenson before moving on to Colorado to spend my last days with the Andersons, camping on their land. The drive from the canyon to Colorado was restful and, as always, beautiful. By now my path had taken me on the same roads so many times, I could no longer count how often I had passed the Red Rock Mesas. The bold rust color was magnificent against the blue sky. Each time I saw them it was as if it was the first time. I didn't feel as though I was on any kind of timeline, so I drove slowly, taking in the sights. At one point near the Arizona-New Mexico border, I pulled the car over to have a rest. I was in the middle of nowhere, a great place to be. Unable to see any buildings of any kind, I wanted to take in the solitude of my location. It was stark desert land with foliage scattered about in the mid-afternoon sunshine. I got out of the car and stood at its side. I pondered the last few days' events with Robert and wondered if I would indeed ever be living in this wondrous universe of desert. Even with the stark scenery, I could still feel the energy of the earth. It's like a song being whispered in your ear, calling for you to sing in harmony with it. I am sure that anyone who is at all spiritual that travels this area feels the earth calling them to stay in the desert. Until people experience it for themselves, there really is no way to convey its full effect on the soul. It was almost time to get back on the road when I did a double take of something to the right of the car in the near distance. A star orb floated past. "Hello," I said to it and smiled. I shook my head and wondered how I was so fortunate to see them again. In a matter of a few seconds they were gone and I was off to see the Andersons. I arrived back in Colorado in time to join the Anderson family for dinner. I felt blessed that they were being so kind to me. And throughout this trip many people gave me free camping and food. I was extremely grateful for all of it. And at night over dinner I told them how my visit with the Hopi elder went. Leanne, Kathleen and Jason were happy I came back to share with them my adventure to Hopi. I explained to them it wasn't as exciting as it was on my last visit. I was calmer and more focused. I went on to tell them how the Hopi man offered to gather the other elders for me to talk to, but I had declined. There really wasn't a lot to share with them at that time. Before we all went to sleep late that night, we made plans to drive to Mesa Verde the next day. I was looking forward to seeing the ancient Anasazi sites again. I began to think about Harold and how we met the 2 years prior. As I drifted off to sleep, I could feel that moment again, remembering how it helped shape my life as it gave me confirmation of the information the aliens told me in 1988. I opened my eyes to the sunshine and heat of the morning. It seemed like I hadn't even slept. A simple blink of my eyes and I was waking to a new day. The Andersons were all moving outside the tent, already making breakfast. When I stepped outside I was welcomed with warm smiles and the smell of brewing coffee. After coffee and a quick breakfast, Everyone jumped into my rental car and off we went to Mesa Verde. The drive to turn off wasn't far from our campsite. Along the way we saw a bald eagle circling in the distance further down the highway. We all decided that this was a good omen. I was unsurprised by the sighting. I reflected on seeing the bald eagles in Vancouver just before I saw the star orb in the middle of the day at the bus stop. The excitement of seeing the bald eagle kept the conversation going until we arrived at the turn off to Mesa Verde. As we drove the winding road up the mountain, I took in the surprising changes that had occurred since my last visit. The brush seemed to have grown higher and was greener than the previous year. The dead, statuesque trees from the fire were somewhat less noticeable. As we took the last turn before reaching the tourist center, I looked to my left, out the side window. I did a double take. There, not far from the car, about 100 feet away, going in the opposite direction, were two star orbs. I shook my head in disbelief, thinking that maybe it was a glint off something that I was seeing. I tried to keep my eyes on the winding road while trying to get a better look at the orbs. On the third look, I told Jason, who was sitting in the front passenger seat, asking him to look out the window to the left. I tried to point out the orb to him. Unfortunately, I was too late. They were too far away in the distance and no longer visible. I felt sad that Jason was unable to see the orbs, since I felt they may have shown themselves for his benefit. After another couple of minutes, we were at the tourist office. Jason and I stood outside, waiting in line for tickets for a tour. Shiprock was far off in the distance, draped in a gentle haze of purple, making it look mystical. I took in the view while thinking about the star orb. Suddenly, in the distance in the same direction, I saw another orb going past again. I couldn't believe my eyes. I blinked and lost it for a moment before catching another glimpse of it. I knew that if I wanted to show Jason or anyone else, I had to act quickly. I grabbed Jason by the arm to turn him towards the orb. It was so far off in the distance that it was hard to keep track of, blending itself against the stark desert ground and the bright sunshine of the late morning. "Look," I said to Jason as I pointed with my finger. "There is another orb. Can you see it? It's almost gone." He eagerly searched the skies with his eyes. I stood closer to Jason, trying to have him follow my arm to my fingertip in pointing to the orb, but sadly he was unable to see it. I wasn't surprised, since it was barely visible even to me. Leanne, Savannah and Kathleen came to stand outside with us. Shaking my head, I told them how I had just seen another star orb and that I tried to point it out to Jason. I couldn't help but think that he was meant to have the opportunity to see them. I was happy that the Andersons were enjoying their time on the mountain with the spirits of the past. It was an honor to be able to walk on their soil, see the sky and touch the earth at the ancient sites where there was a strong feeling of mystical power. The day passed quickly and it was time to head back to camp. Once we arrived, everyone busied themselves cooking or setting up for the night. Upon my return to Vancouver, I knew I had a couple of weeks to tidy up loose ends and prepare for my move to Cranbrook, where I would be looking after my aging mother. My sister was kind enough to agree to pay for the plane ticket to return home. I had left a message for Janice to wait until she heard from me before making a final purchase for the plane ticket to Cranbrook. As I waited for dinner to be ready, I borrowed Jason's phone to call Janice. I thought it would be a short call, but after she told me she already bought the ticket, I became upset and told her that I would call her back. Knowing the conversation would take longer than a couple of minutes, I wanted to drive to the nearest payphone so I could charge the call to my home instead of having the Andersons pay for it. 20 minutes later, I was standing at a gas station telephone talking with Janice again. We argued for a few minutes about the plane ticket. Finally, I realized that it was already booked and paid for, and so there was nothing more to talk about. I couldn't change what was done, and I needed to be grateful that she paid for the ticket in the first place. I was still very upset as I drove back to the Andersons' campsite. Suddenly, I noticed the words of the song on the radio station. "Why are you so sad? You are safe with Kathleen. Close your eyes and put your head in her lap. She will comfort you. Do not be sad. You know you can see what is on the horizon. The ships are there in the distance and are on their way to you now. We know you miss your home, we miss you too. You can see upon the horizon the ships will be there to take you home. Do not be sad. Look to the west and the ships will be there to take you home. Watch for them, they are grey. It was just a woman's voice, there was no music in the background. Strange for a rock station, I thought. What just happened? When the song ended, a hard rock song came on the radio. I don't like to jump to conclusions, but I couldn't help but wonder if the song was some sort of message. It was not the normal way messages came to me, through the radio or their television. And this was a first for me. As I went over the song in my mind, I couldn't find any other reasonable explanation for what I just heard, other than it was the aliens. Hashish was very weird. Once I arrived back at the campsite, I quickly told the Andersons about the song I just heard. They all thought it was very odd as well and were surprised I remembered as much of the wording as I did. How could I not? Clearly, it did not belong in the normal context of the radio station's music, and so I paid special attention. Not only was it void of music, the words to the song were not at all normal as well. The only reason I paid attention was because it was completely out of place. It was like finding a block of butter in your bedroom dresser drawer. I was very happy to spend my last night in the Four Corners area with such amazing people. Our last dinner together was a time of reflection over the past 3 weeks. And his journey had been a transition point for me. I knew that upon my return I would begin working on the book. Where this path would lead me would reveal itself in time. The next morning I packed up my things and put them in the car for the last time. It was hard to accept that I had to leave and go back to Albuquerque to catch my flight home. After all, I felt like I was already home. It was a hard morning and an emotional one for me. I lingered as long as possible before I knew I had to say goodbye. As I gave Kathleen, Jason, Savannah and Leanne a hug, goodbye tears overcame me and I had to jump in the car and leave quickly in order to avoid a scene. As I drove away I looked in the mirror for the last time to see everyone waving goodbye. I will be back, I kept telling myself, another day, another year. The drive to Albuquerque was uneventful and the flight home even more so. When the plane touched down in Vancouver I felt focused on the immediate future. Work was on my mind almost immediately. I wanted to make some money before going to Cranbrook and I only had a couple of weeks to tidy up all my loose ends. After all, I had no idea how long I would be in Cranbrook once I arrived. The search begins. It felt like I had just landed in Vancouver and there I was, already on a plane to Cranbrook. Janice was at the airport to greet me and bring me to my mother's home. It was August 1, 2005. 1 month short of the 20-year anniversary of leaving Cranbrook. It was a strange feeling to be in my hometown again, this time to stay. The drive from the airport gave me an opportunity to see the beautiful mountains that surrounded the area. I had always loved looking at them as a child. On every visit I took to Cranbrook they would capture my attention as much as they did when I was young. I used to daydream, wondering which animals lived on the mountain. Imagining beautiful meadows filled with wild flowers at the top. As we pulled into the driveway I could see my mother in the window. She was already smiling in anticipation of seeing me again. As I walked through the door to the house I could feel my life's direction shifting. And this was a new beginning and partly reinforced my commitment to the requests of the aliens. My mother was very happy that I was back in her home to stay. The room lit up as I walked up the stairs and gave her a big hug and kiss. She was beaming with happiness over my arrival and that made the first step of my move to Cranbrook a good one. My goals were clear. My priority was to help look after my mother and, just as important, I was to look for the objects the aliens had left with me as a child. I had to work on writing the book about my experiences. My last goals were to take some classes at the community college and look for a job. I shared these goals with Janice and, to my surprise, she had some thoughts as to where I had buried the object. She told me in her own words where she remembered me hiding it. The exact details she gave were the same as I remembered. After showing the gift to Janice, I placed it in an old white cloth before placing it in the ground. I told her she wasn't allowed to touch it and we both had to make sure that our father never found out about it. I then put it in the hole I dug in the earth and covered it with rocks and soil. Even though I remembered my sister being with me as I buried the object, I didn't think she had any memories of the event. What she had remembered included the detail of the white cloth as well as having to hide it from our father. I was amazed. When I asked her exactly where it was, she confirmed its location for me. Her memory was exactly the same as mine. Never before had Janice and I talked in detail about this object. Having her input was important to me and motivated me further. There was a slight problem, however. Janice had a vague memory of moving the object. As soon as she told me this piece of information, my heart sank. How was I going to find it if she had moved it? My first thought was for hypnosis to recover the memory, but I could never ask her to do such a thing. It would be like asking a person to open Pandora's box. Once it's open, she could never close it. There was no point in digging for the object until I had more information from Janice. So I waited, patiently. I knew an answer to the problem would surface in time. A week later, Janice came to tell me she thought having hypnosis may help her remember where she moved it. I was very happy that she came to the decision on her own with no influence from me. Now all I had to do was find a hypnotist that I could trust with such delicate information. I knew that this task in such a small town would prove to be a challenge. Over the next week I focused on finding the right person to hypnotize Janice. At least twice a day I meditated on the universe to bring the right person into my life. Near the end of the week my efforts were rewarded. And rough a strange set of circumstances, I found myself talking to a woman with whom I had had a brief encounter in Vancouver 15 years prior. It was through our conversation that she brought up the name of a counselor, Helen, who also did hypnosis. I knew she was the right person to help Janice as soon as she told me about her. The circumstances in which she was being introduced to me were rather amazing. I knew my request for a hypnotist had been answered. Now all I had to do was meet with her to confirm she was indeed the right person for the job. And that afternoon I went straight home and made an appointment to meet with Helen the following day. I was excited since this would bring me one step closer to finding the object I buried as a child, one step closer to my possible fate. From the moment I laid eyes on Helen, I felt comfortable with her. However, I needed to talk with her to confirm my intuition was correct. We sat in her living room and had a long conversation regarding the reason for the need of a hypnotist. I told her about the aliens and my family's involvement with them. She was very open and accepting of the whole story. Helen then quickly and excitedly agreed to try and help Janice remember details of where the object was. She asked Janice and I to be as specific as possible about the date on which the encounter occurred. If we had the exact date, it would help Helen to be more specific and she wouldn't have to use any leading questions during the hypnosis. I was very adamant that she not lead Janice in her questioning in any way. She needed to be very careful with what she asked. Janice and I couldn't come up with the exact date, but we both knew that I was either 4 or 5 years old. And that meant it had been 1970 or 1971. We wondered how we would ever figure it out. If I was patient and held my faith, the information would come to me somehow. We had to wait a couple of weeks, anyway, in order to set up a date to begin the hypnosis sessions. In the meantime, I focused my thoughts on trying to pin down the exact date of the abduction as a child. Janice and I talked about the time of year and determined it was either early fall or spring. There were no vegetables in the farmer's field, so we knew the time of year was as accurate as it could be. How to determine the year was another matter, and we both said we would focus on trying to remember more details. It was only a few days after I spoke to Helen that I went to visit Catherine and James Johnson, Gillian's parents. Gillian was my childhood friend and, at the age of 12, I had lived with them for about a year. Life at my parents' house was difficult. I was extremely grateful when they took me into their home with open arms. They really were like a second family to me. Since my return to Cranbrook, I had visited Catherine and James on a couple of occasions. It was a nice surprise to know they still had a place in their hearts for me.